VentureCast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Music. Horror. Subculture. And overall badass. Welcome to Kettle Whistle Radio.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
With your hosts, Dave and Sean.
Testing. Hey, how the fuck are you? Hi. Hello. Hey. I know it's been a while. We have a very special guest tonight, CJ Goodwin, director, writer, producer, and actor. He has a new take on Sherlock Holmes.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
And it's one that I don't think I've seen done yet. Maybe they've done it in Europe. I don't think so, though. I'm very schooled in Arthur Conan Doyle, and I know the approach that he took with his Sherlock Holmes character, and CJ Goodwin actually takes it there. I'm very interested to hear what he has to say about that. He also has a scale of ghostality and fear factor. I didn't know there was a scale of ghosts, and I guess I'll have to consult Miss Heather Taddy on that, who is in Kansas on an investigation, and she's going to come back and tell us about that very soon.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But And I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
We're going to talk about catharsis in horror because C.J. Goodwin, well, he brought it up. And Eyes of a Roman. He took this bold approach at a historical, an arc on history. And we'll have him talk about his dramatic piece. But yes, Jackson was his horror movie, and he's going to talk about that too. And we're talking a little bit about soundtracks and what's important about them and music in general and how important it is to a film. And got a lot of music that goes on here too, I got to say. We're going to be playing some new stuff too. A band called PMAD, P-M-A-D, and a song called Sisters. Now there's a lot of, I'm going to say this is like a tune for like fans of 120 minutes back in the 80s into the 90s. There's a lot of alt-rock, goth, I want to say post-punk as well going on here. You're going to hear a lot of different sounds from different bands that you probably liked if you grew up in the 80s and into the 90s. I did not. I'm 70s and I ran the gamut of all that. But I got to say, it's reminiscent of everything you heard on 120 minutes. And the guitars, pay attention to the guitars. Artistic, amazing, and revolving, and even the bass. Like, there's a lot going on here. And I enjoyed this tune, and I enjoyed this band. Again, PMAD, lowercase p, uppercase m, a, d. The song is called Sisters. And this album was released on August 31st. The new single. So I'm going to read this right off the bat here from the band itself. The new single Sisters is PMAD's take on those we love gone too soon. They don't go away very far. They walk beside us every day, having left such an impression on us. They are still loved, still missed, and a very important influence on our lives. Sisters by PMAD is a simultaneously intense, dark, brooding, and yet hopeful song, showcasing high-energy guitars and an organically authentic drum line. Sisters is an emotionally warmy. It's warmy. It's warm indie rock and a song that boldly presents a post-punk rock sound and lyrical style. As always, PMAD has us thinking with his powerful lyrics. One man. I do know the man. We're going to talk to him soon. With his powerful lyrics, this time on the love and loss of those closest to us. And I want to thank you assholes that are texting me right now as I'm reading this, because it almost dedicated it to you. But that's my fault for having my phone on. Quite frankly, my heart goes out to my friend Joanne, who had a major loss. A lot of my friends did this summer. We all did at some point, and my family as well. And I'm thinking of my friend Joanne out in Long Island right now. And you're not alone, kid. You're not alone. We're all there with you. And we'll let this song go out to you. Apparently, it's right on par with where we are right now. So let's listen to PMAD right now, Sisters. And we'll get in with CJ Goodwin. And let me tell you, this guy, very insightful. I think he downplays himself a little bit because there's a lot of talent going on there and a lot of very bold, taking on the Sherlock Holmes character. And I try not to give spoilers and, you know, directors, they love to give them as a tease. And we love that too here. And thanks for listening, Kettle Whistle Radio. We'll be back here soon with Sean and Taddy at some point because we got a lot of concerts to wrap up. I mean, when I say a lot, we went everywhere from a Five Finger Death Punch to Duran Duran to Idols. There's just so much going on. All right. And we'll catch up. All right. And there's Sean texting me right now. Yeah. Where are you, punk? All right. Hey, enjoy this song and enjoy this interview with CJ Goodwin, director. Okay. Thanks for listening to Kettle Whistle Radio. And as always, find us on Spotify now. Everywhere you can find podcasts. I'm at Fairly Dark on Twitter. Not real active. Trying to get more active. I know I'm supposed to be. But Instagram, kettle.whistle.radio. Whatever the fuck. All right. Hey. But please, please, you got to stick around for the end of the show for a Jive Bomb from Flat Spot Records. Let me tell you, Flat Spot Records out of New York City, what a connection. Great, absolute great punk and hardcore and rock and roll. Jive Bomb, Primitive Desires. Stick around that for the end of that, the end of the show, just so you can hear that. And then hit up Flat Spot Records and say I sent you there, okay? And in the meantime, just have a good time, all right? And be nice to each other. It's rather swell. Without some folks and some friends today, no co-hosts. Long story there. You'll get to hear all about it. Sean's a little busy, and
well, Miss Heather Taddy was going to be here, but she had tickets to see Corey Feldman live. I'm not going to elaborate on that until she comes in and talks about it. But instead, you know what? I got somebody much more important. CJ Goodwin, who is a director, writer, actor, producer of indie films. Maybe there's more out there I don't know about. But how are you feeling today, Mr. Goodwin?
Doing good, man. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Oh, hell yeah, man. What's your mindset like right now?
Oh, well, right now I'm in pre-production for our rated Sherlock Holmes film that I'm doing, so kind of got that wrapped in my brain right now, but besides that, I'm doing pretty good.
So I pulled you out of the nethersphere to do an interview while you have too much on your mind. That's probably the best time to pick a director's brain.
I think so. Yeah, you get some more like behind-the-scenes leakage that you're probably not supposed to say, and you'll get it out of me.
And minus the spoilers. We try not to give spoilers here, but directors have a habit of doing that sometimes. Where do we begin with you? You're more than a horror director, but you seem to have a flair for history.
I guess my latest film that's coming out in November is called Eyes of a Roman. That's a period piece with Marcus Crassus and Spartacus. And so that was obviously really challenging film. Took us about 2 years. There's a lot of wardrobe that goes involved with something like that. We actually had over 200 people that worked on this film, which is a lot, you know, when it comes to, you know, the low to no budget indie films, at least made here in Texas. And my next film is the Sherlock Holmes, and of course that's more like the 1880, the, you know, 1905 range. So another period piece. And so, yeah, man, I guess I just like going a little bit more on the history side and bringing those worlds to life.
You like to challenge yourself, whether it's about the Romans or Sherlock Holmes. Right now, okay, so we got Mare of the Night. That's your Sherlock Holmes film coming out. November, is that right?
We're filming Sherlock Holmes actually in March right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Eyes of a Roman, my Roman film, comes out November 5th right, to the public. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the film actually, what caught my attention too, because I took a class in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The film actually, you're going to delve into Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's, the depiction originally showing as Holmes as a cocaine addict. And Doyle, from what I understand, didn't he think that cocaine was going to be the drug of the future? A good one?
Yeah, I think I don't want to, you know, people to quote me on that, but I think that's pretty close to what you're saying. But I can tell you with our character, with Sherlock, yeah, you know, Doyle, he wrote, you know, a lot of drug use and alcohol usage in his books. And I think there was some point in there where he thought it was good to use these drugs to help, you know, magnify his brain outage, basically, I guess.
Exactly, and, yeah.
Yeah. But we're gonna show the drug use and the alcohol use that Sherlock did and go down the rabbit hole, basically, and not come out.
That's, oh, wow. Okay, a totally different take on that. I dig that. Because, when I took this class, they made it look like, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle thought it was going to be the wonder drug, the thinking man's drug, and Sherlock, delved into that. And it's interesting to see somebody use that take. I don't know that's been done before you.
I don't think so, man. Like, I researched it because I don't like to do stuff that people have done before. Obviously, the character's been done a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think what drew me to him was the way that he was written about. And I was like, man, you know, you haven't really seen the drug usage or the alcohol usage too much on the character. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, well, if you're going to take that on, you might as well just go for it and do R-rated and really bring out those, you know, the demons as well. You know, think about all those type of murderers and cases that he had to deal with. Mm-hmm. You know, if that was a real life person, this character, you know, 50 years of dealing with crime and murder and abuse, what that would do to a person, and then tap it on the addiction to like cocaine and opium and alcohol. You got a pretty crazy film.
That's amazing. So. No. I'm loving this. Again, it's been 30-some years since I took a class in this, and to see somebody actually take it on, very interesting to me. And there will be a female antagonist, from what I understand.
Correct, yeah. So she's going to be an original character that I've created that will go into the Sherlock world. And that's going to be really exciting. You know, I can't reveal too much, but
sure.
You know, she's going to be a very, very challenging person in, with Sherlock. And she riles a lot of stuff up, and I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. And that role actually hasn't even been casted yet. So whoever gets that role, you know, they get to be their own villain in the Sherlock world.
Oh, they should be lining up. They should be lining up to be the female Moriarty, you know?
Yeah, pretty much on all accounts. You know, it's kind of like that times 10 with this character.
Nice.
Yeah.
But you don't have to answer this one, but I got to know, is she going to be a love interest as well?
I mean, there are some love interests in the film, but... I'm not going to say where she connects to.
Good enough. You don't have to answer that. So from what you're telling me, too, this is because we cover horror here. You called this a horror drama.
Yeah, correct. I think, you know, at the heart of the film, it's going to be, you know, sort of the drama side. You know, a lot of, like, love in the film also, really between the brothers of kind of like Sherlock and Watson.
Interesting.
But then around that, we're going to surround them with these horrors. And, you know, what's fun about it is, again, with all these type of cases that he's done and all the drugs he's taking, you can kind of have some fun, especially like on some hallucination type, nightmarish type scenes.
Oh, man.
And so that's what we get to play with. And that's kind of where the horror side comes in, where you'll see, you know, some scary things, some unsettling things, kind of just a mix of horror, right? You know, it's like suspense and ghost-like items and, you know, graphic type items. It's like a big mix. basically everything dark you would think of in the horror or the Sherlock world we're going to show.
And there's a lot to cover there. They crossed over many times into the horror drama. Well, they cross over many times, and Doyle himself, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, unlike his character, he believed in fairies, the European version, not Tinkerbell, folks. and the funny thing is that Sherlock did not. He was mathematical.
Yeah, correct. You know, and Doyle, he also believed that he could speak to spirits from the afterlife. And so he was kind of big on that scene as well, and just very interesting, you know, when you read some of his books and then you read about who he was and sort of how things connected and then sort of how things didn't in his writing.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting, you know, but there's definitely a lot of material in these short stories and the big stories that he wrote, where you can kind of just like, wow, like that's actually pretty graphic. And if you brought that to life nowadays, it would be R-rated.
Right. I'm already looking forward to this one. This is a great take on an old character, and it's bold, very bold attempt. Now you have Les Best is a muse of yours. Is he playing the lead role?
He is. So on Eyes of a Roman, Les Best, he played Marcus Crassus, which is another big character in history, you know, the man who took down Spartacus, basically. And you know, I've worked with Les on all my films, and so he's sort of been there with me from the beginning, and he's believed in me, believed in my work, and we've developed a pretty good relationship. I would say we're kind of family now, to be honest.
Cool.
And when we're on Eyes of a Roman, I started flirting with the idea of doing an R-rated Sherlock Holmes. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, this person would have to be already gone through this journey and kind of being beat down. And so we could show the effects of what happened to him on not only the cases, but all the drug usage that he's gone through. And you know, Les is in his mid-60s. And so it kind of just kind of worked out where I was like, man, if I could get Les to play Sherlock also, I think this would be really solid. Les is a very experienced actor. Done a lot of theater and film. You know, he's been doing it for probably 40 years. And the things that I can see him do are pretty amazing. And so I always try to find something to push him over the edge. And with Crassus, I thought I had it, but he, like, nailed it like it was nothing. So I'm like, okay. And so, like, with Sherlock, like, well, with Sherlock, I can go full spectrum. And so my goal is to really push him over that edge and basically try to break him as an actor. And but I think that's what all actors want anyways. You know, they want that challenge. And this will definitely, I think, take him to his limits.
I agree. The many, many actresses and actors that I've talked to, being pushed to their limits is exactly what they need to get the emotion for that character. That's in my experience. I'm not an actor. I've been in indie film, but I'm not an actor. But I've seen it. When they get pushed, they get better.
Yeah, you know, we were actually filming the part one of our teaser trailer this past weekend. And he was helping on an audition for one of these roles. And I got to see him act out this scene that I wrote for the first time at this audition. And yeah, man, it was really exciting just to watch him bring it to life, you know, with, you know, not only the bringing out the dialogue, but just the, you know, nailing the accent that you have to have. And just the way he moves, and he can bring anger, he can bring tears, he can bring everything that you want. If you put it on the page, he's going to bring it to life, which is what a good actor does.
And that's, you know, that's Les Best, folks. This is a we're talking to CJ Goodwin right now, director, producer, writer, actor. And before we get into Eyes of a Roman a little bit deeper, I've got to ask, this Sherlock Holmes script, I think you answered this already, more of a violent Holmes script than we've seen in the past?
Yeah, so there's definitely very deep, dark dialogue with the drama side. And then, but there's also going to be some very, you know, I call it beautiful, horrific, haunting, you know, imagery in this movie, kind of like a Guillermo del Toro, I guess, would do with, oh man,
everything.
I know. I always forget that one he did with the Loki actor with Crimson Peak.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, so very like haunting but beautiful in the same way.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna have sort of that feel to the movie. There will be some other scenes where we go a little bit more over the top. Where it's very, can be hard to watch on some of these scenes. Because I want the audience to feel like if you were a true detective in the late 1800s dealing with, you know, like Jack the Ripper type crimes, this is what you would see and this is what you would go through, you know? And so we're basically making the character a real person, basically. And we're going to show the audience those effects. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be very horrifying, but beautiful in the same way, man. And we're going to give a lot of nods to the books, man. That's what's exciting, too. Like, a lot of the favorite characters are going to come up in some form or fashion.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So
one last bit on Sherlock before we take our first break here. You got lucky with your location. Can we talk about that? You found a location that hadn't been touched much since 1910.
Yeah. So my one of my friends, Derek Meir, he was in Eyes of a Roman as well, and we actually used his family's property here in Texas. They actually have like 1,600 acres of land out here, and so it's sort of like, yeah, go find a spot to have your battles. And on this land, they just happened to have a couple of houses that were built in like 1905. And so we went and checked them out. And of course, they're very worn down now, but that's the look that we want. So it worked out pretty nice for us to get those houses. Because in our story, Sherlock does not live inside the city limits anymore. He moved out the countryside to get away from all that stuff.
Wow.
So it works out to our favor, and you know, sometimes that happens. You know, you kind of get lucky on some things, and some things you don't. So some things you have to go work hard for, right?
This I have heard from every director in 270 episodes now. Every director, they either get really, really lucky, or they lose the location that they had that was the best location. And those are heartbreaking stories. But yes, I am very aware of that. All right, well, we're talking to CJ Goodwin here, and we're going to be talking. Yes, there's some horror folks coming up here. We're going to tease Jackson, which I got to say, I saw that trailer, and I was sold on Les Best on that. And that we'll close with that one. But we're going to get into Eyes of a Roman when we come back from break here, folks.
Hey, everyone. It's Margarita from Edge of Paradise, and you're listening to Kettle Whistle Radio.
We're back, folks, and we're here with director CJ Goodwin. I gotta say, I have not just noticed him as a director personally. I thought I caught a glimpse of him in a few scenes from his film Eyes of a Roman. Am I wrong?
No, you would be right. I'm in that film as well as an actor. I don't act too much. I'm more on the directing side, but every once in a while, I'll get out there and act as well. And in Eyes of a Roman, I played, I guess, Atticus, and it's actually one of the lead roles in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And really the main reason why I took that on, I was talking with my buddy before we started casting, and we just didn't really think we'd be able to find someone that would be wanting the work for 4 months, basically on no pay, basically. And so he's like, well, maybe you should do it. And so I did my my brave heart. You know, I was like Mel Gibson, and I directed and acted the same movie. And it was fun, but also very, very challenging. And I don't know if I'll ever do that again. You know, it was pretty hard. You know, it's hard to direct yourself when you're trying to act. So it's, you know, you just do the best you can, and then you hope the people that are acting with you give you real feedback, you know, because mm-hmm. sometimes you're like, well, he's the director, so I don't want to say anything. It's like, no, tell me. Like, if I'm not doing it good, you need to tell me. Like, I don't want to hurt the film, basically. So
that's cool. Oh, man, that's awesome. Something you said here, and this caught my attention. I had to bring it up, your director's statement. The truth will always be the hardest of paths. Now, I'm in my 50s now, early 50s, and I found that to be about as true a statement that could be ever heard. The truth will always be the hardest of paths. Now, how does that fall into place in the story of Eyes of a Roman?
Yeah, so I guess that's sort of the heart of the film. You know, I think, you know, with my character, he's found pretty much right in the beginning of the film. The Romans are on the outskirts of Rome, and one of their settlements got attacked by a barbarian group. And everyone dies except for my character. And my character at that time is about 9 to 10 years old. And brought up with Marcus Crassus. He sort of adopts me and then teaches me the Roman ways. And then, you know, Marcus Crassus, he's all about wealth and glory. And so he kind of uses me as a pawn to try to help him get to that moment to basically ruling Rome.
Hmm.
And through my journey, you know, he has me go and like spy in the camp of Spartacus. And when I'm there, I realize that, you know what, the Spartacus and his people, you know, they aren't all that bad. Like, why are we enslaving and killing all these people? You know, and so you kind of find out the truth. And, you know, with the truth being, you know, the hardest of paths and all that good stuff. And so my character starts to kind of fight back, right? Push back on that. It's like, yeah, I'm not comfortable doing this anymore since now I know what the truth is. And I feel like we deal with that on an everyday basis.
Yeah.
You know, it could be from, you know, I really hate my job, but I'm going to keep going. You know, and pretend that I like it because I have duties in my life, like supporting my family. Where if some people, if they had their choice, you know, like your own free choice to do whatever you want, you know, maybe they would quit that job and go do something else, you know? And so you can kind of take it how far you want it, from politics to not agreeing with what your parents say, whatever. And that's kind of what the story is. It's just, it's making difficult decisions and, trying to make the right decision and understanding that every decision you make is going to have consequences, whether it's good or bad. And that's kind of what we deal with. I mean, anyone that knows about history, Spartacus made a choice. He decided to stand up for what was right. And he did a good thing for a little while, but then he lost. He got killed and everybody got crucified. So even though he did the right thing and he made the right choice, he still paid for it, right?
Right.
And so sometimes when you do the right thing, it doesn't always turn out to be the best ending, basically. And that's true in life.
Very true.
You know?
Very true.
And so I just wanted to show that it was exactly the same, basically, in history as well. You know, things haven't really changed on that level, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And here we are talking about it. So it did make some kind of difference. I find it very bold of you, but very bold in general, to take a piece of history and I find it fascinating to make the audience see things from a different perspective. Was that your goal here? Are you changing history or just their perspective?
I'm definitely not changing history. I'm just, it's more getting different perspectives, mm-hmm. From different people within, you know. I think, what's fun with this is we get perspective from, you know, in this time frame, a female slave, a Roman soldier, an adopted child, Spartacus, and Marcus Crassus. So you're almost getting five or six different perspectives in the film, mm-hmm. of what they believe in and what they believe is right. And that's what's interesting, because, you know, as you know, in this world that we know today, there's a lot of people out there that they believe what they're doing is right and nothing else, you know? And so everyone has different perspectives on everything.
Yeah.
And so in this film, I show what these perspectives are from each characters. And what's fun though, with this movie is that each character at some point in time in the film, they do think about what the other person or people are saying to them. And even if it doesn't turn them completely, you do see them think about it in the film, and it does have an effect on them, at least momentarily.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to watch, even, you know, some of the big guys like Marcus Crassus. So
and now you said you filmed this in Texas. You're in San Antonio, correct?
Yes.
But you filmed it elsewhere. Now, I don't care, anywhere in Texas. Wardrobe had to be not just expensive, but very uncomfortable.
Right.
Was that the biggest complaint?
Yeah, so Texas, you know, we're not like obviously the northern states in the U.S., you know, when it comes to being cold.
No, I've spent a lot of time in Austin and Dallas and Euless, but yeah.
I would say, you know, for San Antonio, our cold weather, you know, in the mornings, it's normally like, you know, mid 30s. And then by like 2 o'clock, it's like 55 or 60 degrees.
Right.
And we consider that cold, you know, we're wusses. Now, of course, in the summer, it's 110. And so people, if they're from the north, they come down here, they're like passing out.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like the reverse effect. You know? And but, you know, we were out there in basically just tunics and sandals running around in 26 degree weather. And it was cold, man. It was cold. And we had chain mail that was real.
Oh, cool. Okay. I was going to ask about that. Okay.
Yeah. So that was very, very heavy for the actors. And of course, that was very cold as well when it was cold outside. You know, the helmets were legit. You know, we actually made our own swords out of wood. And then with the prop department, they were able to add, I forgot what it's called. It's not foil, but it's something that can kind of go over the wood to make it look real. On top of that, just, you know, kind of spray painting it the right way and movie magic, basically.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love this stuff. You probably shouldn't give it all out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, even like the big blockbusters, you know, they're not using real swords either, you know, or they should be. So.
They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, no, we won't get it. That's a whole nother story and level we're not going to talk about today. But there is something. Soundtrack. Location, we already talked about, but soundtrack. How do you go about getting a soundtrack for a film like this? Where do you begin?
Well, so my composer, his name is Antonio Bredanti, and he lives in Canada, actually. And we've never met in real life. We just only met through, like, basically Zoom calls or, you know, the Facebook Messenger stuff. And we found each other for the film Jackson. And on Jackson, which was my second feature, he wrote that music for me. We worked really well together. And then from there, we did Goodnight LMB, which was going to be a feature but turned into a short because of all the COVID stuff. And then with Eyes of a Roman, he wrote that score as well. And that's kind of how I got my music, you know. And when you have a composer like Antonio, it's a game changer, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have great music that goes with your story, which we do, and, you know, the music, it's very majestic. You know, it's kind of like Gladiator, you know, Ridley Scott's film. It's very similar to that style, I guess.
We're very focused here on soundtracks. So, yeah, it's very important to us, too.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I think, if you're really into that that type of music or soundtracks, you know, like Gladiator or Braveheart, this is right up there with it. He did a really great job. You can hear a little bit on the trailer that's out right now, the Eyes of a Roman trailer. There's some of his music with that.
Cool.
And it's just beautiful work, man. He's a very talented guy. There's a lot of talented composers out there. He's one of them. And he actually just got picked up by Disney.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, 4 or 5 months ago. So I don't know if I'm going to see him anymore.
Oh, man. Maybe he'll do you a favor sometime, you know?
I'm sure he'll still be around and help me out. But,
Hopefully, yeah. You never forget your friends and the people that got you there. That's the way I've always looked at things. Curious, too. You probably don't have to answer this, but if it's a spoiler, but what was the hardest scene to film? What was the toughest one to film? Maybe a battle scene or violence or maybe just an interaction?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like, you know, every day since we were dealing with the elements, you know, 90% of the film was filmed outdoors. And we were filming in the winter. In fact, we had the for Texas, we had 2 weeks of snow.
Geez, so you had an establishing shot problem.
I would have loved to get some snow shots, but, you know, frostbite and, you know, when it snows in Texas, we don't know what to do, so they just shut down all the highways. And,
this, you know, I know, I do know that.
Traveling was not good. And then, of course, then we had the power outage.
Oh.
And so Texas was without power for like a week or two.
Yes. Oh, man. I do remember that.
And so we ran into that issue. But to kind of get back to your question about the, I guess, what was the hardest?
The toughest scene to film.
To be honest, I think it was, I guess I know which one it was. I mean, for me personally, I know which one it was. but I can't say that one because that's more too much of a spoiler. But I think really the first weekend, I guess, was probably the most challenging just because it was the first time we were all out there together, kind of cast and crew, and we still had a lot to film. And so it's, when you're trying to get to know each other, you know, everyone right away, that can be a little challenging. You know, obviously, we had Zoom calls and everybody was talking through that. But for a lot of us, this is the first time meeting up. And you get out there and it's, you know, 28 degrees and we're setting up stuff and doing all that. And I think that the first weekend I was, I had some pretty heavy dialogue. And so right out of the gate, you know, I had to try to, you know, set that bar level, which was a little challenging because you're already doing so many things, right, as a director.
Everything.
But yeah, I mean, that was probably the hardest part. You know, everyone thinks it's, you know, normally the fighting scenes, but, you know, to be honest, we rehearsed for 3 weekends a couple of months before we started filming. So everybody already knew their marks.
That's cool. Wow.
Yeah, so once we got out there, we already knew what we were doing. And so, to be honest, the fight scenes weren't all, you know, too hard as far as, like, what are we going to do? Because we already knew. Those get a little painful, you know, because even though we are using, like, wooden swords and stuff, if you see the trailer, there's people being flipped over people's bodies. And
yeah, there was some punches in the face there, some raps to the head that looked like they connected.
Yeah, you know, I think we definitely had some stunt people, or if they weren't stunt people, they were okay with taking some licks, you know, and that's all stuff that you get ahead of time, obviously, to make sure they're comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those people. Obviously, I wanted to make it as real as possible. So I'm like, yeah, in the trailer, when Crassus slaps me in the face in the tent, he really slapped me.
I knew that was real. I knew it.
Yeah. You know, I think I took everything except for the headbutts in the film. You know, those were fake, but we made them look as real as possible. So,
I'm just saying. All right, well, you know, this is funny. I should have started with this, but we are kind of meeting for the first time. But the reason that you're here, you listened to the Patrick Ray interview I did, a phenomenal horror indie director. Are you guys friends?
We're not, you know, I've actually never talked with Patrick. I know of his work. I've seen him through social media.
Okay.
And, I follow, some of his work and posts. But I've actually never have spoken with him.
Well, no, it's flattering that you appreciated that. And I'm glad that we met, in the strangest ways, just like you're saying, how you guys zoomed each other before you were on the set. You know, we have this thing now where we can meet like this. I guess it breaks the ice in some ways, but there's nothing like being in person. You know, I'd like to meet you sometime also, but I appreciate you connecting. I think we might have been friends prior on Facebook prior to, that. I'm not sure. Before you listen to Patrick Ray. But yeah, go back and listen to that one, folks. That's a good one too. But we're going to get right back with CJ Goodwin right now. We just talked about Eyes of a Roman. If you're not sold on what he had to say just now, watch the trailer. It's on YouTube. Where else can you find it? Just YouTube?
Yeah, I think just YouTube or on actual Facebook. We have an Eyes of a Roman page.
Yep.
You can go there as well, and it's there also.
Very cool. All right, we're going to take our last break here before we finish up here, because we're going to talk. Yes, folks, he did make a horror movie that I missed, and when I saw the trailer, I was kicking myself for it. We're going to talk Jackson next, but we're going to leave you with this. We're going to let CJ figure out, he needs to, when we come back from break, I want to hear about his favorite horror movie and his favorite band. All right, so you think about that, CJ, and we'll come right back.
Afraid of the dark, but you should be. things that glow here in the dark. Things best left unseen.
With the initial smoke clear from the fall of tomorrow, the blood now flows even thicker with dwelling in the dark. 11 stories. All bits of the same mysterious puzzle, fitting together with horrific parallels to its predecessor. Get ready for new, truly terrifying tales set in the broken world from the fall of tomorrow. Take a closer look at what's now dwelling in the dark. If you dare. Available on Amazon in traditional print and ebook. Get your copy today. Visit www.fairlydarkproductions.com for more info on the author and his work.
All right, folks, friends, and fiends, thanks for staying with us. We are here with CJ Goodwin. Like I said, director, producer, artist, extraordinaire. I haven't used that term in a long time. Everybody says extraordinaire. Unless you actually see the person in their work, then you can say it. The trailers I saw with your work, I cannot wait to see Sherlock Holmes. I cannot wait to see Eyes of the Roman. And this one coming up, Jackson, I can't wait to see. This is an actual horror movie, folks, called Jackson. And it came out a while ago. There's a trailer you can watch. And again, your buddy Les Best is in it. Correct?
He's in there.
Before we dig in deep, though, I did give you a little bit of homework here. We'd like to know your favorite horror movie or favorite band.
Sure. So, yeah, I think on the horror side, you know, mine's probably a little bit more up to date. I really like the Conjuring.
Good.
I like that one and the second one because James Wan directed those. And,
yes.
You know, his story. And I'm a big James Wan fan when it comes to the horror side, just because I feel like I do sort of the same style where if you watch The Conjuring, especially in The Conjuring 2, it's really about the love and relationship between the Warrens.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, so that's the heart of the film. And then the horror is around it. Well, I do something very similar with my movies. Jackson's that way. You know, the Sherlock Holmes movie is going to be that way. You know, that's just sort of my style. And so I really kind of flock to his style and the way he makes films. And plus there's some pretty scary moments in those movies. So.
Yeah. Mare of the Night sounds like it. Man, I don't want you to give spoilers, but you brought up Jack the Ripper. I know I'm straying from the subject right now. You can't really talk about what... can you talk if Jack shows up or not?
Well, I mean, I am trying to make this as realistic as possible.
Okay.
So, you know, in my story, you know, Sherlock is a real person.
Mm.
So, yeah. So Jack may be around. We'll find out.
Very cool. I like that. That's even more of a tease than I wanted. So, all right. So favorite band. Do you have a band, music you like?
So I'm actually, I love kind of all music. I'm one of those guys, you know, I'll listen to, you know, Tom Petty, Bob Marley, Collective Soul, The Beatles, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Mm. You know, I'm kind of all over the place.
Nothing wrong with any of that.
Yeah, so I mean, I really like all type of music, to be honest, you know. So I don't know if I have like this is my band, you know, that I just love and will listen to. You know, obviously I was an 80s kid, and so I listened to a lot of the 80s rock bands growing up.
Interesting. You know, I thought you were a lot younger than that. Okay.
No, I was born in 81.
Okay.
And so my, you know, my parents, they got me on it pretty early, you know, as you know, Motley Crue and
I just saw them again.
You know, yeah, I think they were in San Antonio, I think too, but I missed out on that one. But yeah, I got to give a shout out to some of my extras that were in Eyes of a Roman.
Yeah, please.
They kind of have their own. I want to say it's a heavy metal band. They're called Hellgrim. So H-E-L-L. G-R-I-M-M. And they do tours. So they've been touring toward the U.S. and hitting up some clubs and stuff. and they're pretty good, man. They're pretty good. So you can find them on Facebook also.
I'm already interested. All they have to do is give me permission. I'll play whatever they want. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just released a new song called Ritual. And but yeah, I know they would love the shout out from you for sure. They're really nice people, man. They came on and helped out on my film. They were there every day I needed them. And then they go out and rock. So it's kind of a cool group for sure.
I have an open door policy for any Texas band. Are they a Texas band? I assume they are.
Yeah, they're out of San Antonio.
Oh, yeah, then, yeah, please. I'll hit them up, but, yeah, all I need is permission to play. I'm already interested. That sounds great. Yes. Now, Jackson.
I just tagged you. Should be coming there in a second. Yes. I just tagged you for you, so it'll be easier for you to find them.
I appreciate that. We love that. Any new music, just like our ears are tuned immediately. But now, back to you, my friend. So, Jackson, this is a horror movie. Can you give us a little insight on it? The trailer does speak volumes, and it appears to be like one of my favorite kinds of that particular genre. But yeah, I'd love to hear if you could just give us a little insight on it.
Sure. So it's definitely a psychological thriller, you know, that sort of style where there's, the paranormal and the ghost type feel, kind of like The Conjuring, that type of style. And basically the story, this really isn't giving anything away because it happens basically in the credits. But Trevor Knight, who is played by Les Best, he's a paranormal investigator. Mm-hmm. That is his career. And his wife dies giving childbirth to his son, who his son's name is Jackson, hence the title of the film. And as Jackson grows up, probably around 7 or 8 years old, Trevor realizes that Jackson can kind of get in touch with the spirits and see things. And so once he finds this out, Trevor Knight, he decides to use his son to his benefit and put Jackson in these very intense situations. And I kind of made a scale, so like a GH5, which means ghost house, and then 5 is the highest level you can have. Well, so he was like kind of prepping his son, right, with some GH1s and 2s so they're not too intense. Mm-hmm. But once you get to GH4s, the ghosts can harm you. And obviously GH5 is the worst that it gets. And GH5 was actually my first film that I made. That's the title of it.
I saw a glimmer of that. I was going to ask you about it. Is that available?
I don't think so. Yeah. GH5 and Jackson, they were out and they were available. Like we were talking about a little bit before, it was on Amazon Prime, some of these other platforms.
Right.
But it got taken off, and I just haven't really re-released it back to the world yet.
Okay.
Doesn't mean I'm not going to. I can definitely send you a private link pretty simply.
Please.
Where you can check it out.
Please, I'd watch it tonight.
So what's interesting, GH5 was my first film, and then Jackson is actually the prequel to that.
Cool.
And so those two movies connect.
I love it.
But now they can be watched separately. If you only watched one of them, you would never know, what I mean? And so you don't need the other film to make the other film, basically. But there are connections, so it's a lot of fun to kind of watch both of them, kind of see some of those Easter eggs,
No, I love it. That is actually my favorite approach to writing. Truly. If you could read two things separately, but you can put them together, but if they're separate, they still stand on their own. There's something to that I've just always found intriguing, and I've done it myself.
Yeah, it's very cool. And so obviously, if you see the Jackson trailer, you can kind of see where it starts to lead to. Kind of Trevor, he kind of gets, pushing for that the money and the glory type of thing, and he gets kind of out of control. And before you know it, it's just chaos, basically. And but it's also very heartfelt in there. I when I was writing it, I have a lot of like the father-son type storylines, in my films. And I think most, you know, writers, I think they, you know, you write what you know. And so I think it's sort of the same with musicians. So like if you've been affected in a certain way in your personal life, you kind of end up writing about those type of things. And so I draw from that. You know, I draw from what's around me and kind of what affects me as a person. And you kind of put that into your writing while you're creating these characters. And I don't know. So it's fun, man. It's fun to do. It's another really great film performance by Les. That was my second feature. And, you know, what's fun is, you know, if you watch both of them, you see the progression. You know, GH5 was my very first film. You know, I didn't go to film school. I just learned on my own. And so GH5, on all accounts, is pretty rough, you know. And then Jackson's 10 times better, you know. Eyes of a Roman's 10 times better than Jackson, you know. So you just keep growing as an artist and getting better and better and better. And it's always fun. I think that's why Les keeps coming back and works with me, because he sees my progression. But he also sees the passion and the love that I put into each project. You know, that obviously pushes everything. It's kind of why you have this podcast, David. You know, if, yes. If we didn't truly really love it, we wouldn't be doing.
You're right. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah, you just, wow, you just took me right out of my next question there. but yeah, my favorite films are the ones that like purvey the feeling that someone or something is always watching you. And watching that trailer for Jackson, I'm still mad at myself for not seeing it. I get that feeling like there's like, all right, we'll just get into some of my more recent favorites, like the Babadook, Mothman Prophecies, not that new, but Something Wicked This Way Comes, not that new. There's just this something is watching you and controlling the situation. Something's pulling the strings, you know, like begs the question, who is pulling those strings? I'm not sure if that's where you are with this, but that's what I got from the trailer.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely some of that in there. You know, I think, I think the heart of the story with this one is, you know, sometimes even parents can be blinded and focus too much on their careers. Without them even realizing it, they're damaging and hurting their own children. And I think that's where this story sort of stems from. And it kind of goes from there. And I think that's where the heart of this film is. And that's why there's definitely, you know, some emotional moments in the movie. And that's kind of where I live. You know, even if it's a horror film, there's going to be some deep dialogue with emotion involved. And not all horror is like that.
No.
You know, some horror is like, you know, Chainsaw Massacre, we're going to, you know, cut you up and kill you. Right. You know?
Yep.
And, which there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's people love all sorts of movies, you know what I mean? And that's just sort of where I live with my films. I like to tackle serious subject matter, whether it's within a family or as big as, you know, Marcus Kraft is trying to kill innocent people and enslave 6,000 of them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, so, I do.
Yeah.
Yes. Instead of just having the final girl in a slasher, you're developing characters that we care about. We care about, it sounds like we should care about all of them. Not to put down the final girl films, because I enjoy a good slasher when I feel like watching one. But this sounds like this was, I hear this being personal or cathartic for you.
Yeah, you know, I think I touched on that a little bit. I think, you know, I definitely draw from what has affected me as a person, whether growing up as a child or just as an adult in general. I think I can definitely pull from that. And even like in Sherlock, you know, it's like, well, surely that's just all from the books. It's like, well, no, not necessarily, man. You know, you make your own story and then you put in stuff that kind of has affected you a little bit that you think you can kind of connect with the audience on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think most people in the world has had some challenging times with their parents, at some time in their life. And so I just took it to the next level, basically. You know, it's kind of like having problems with your parents on steroids, you know. And so anyways, so yeah, I definitely draw from that. You know, I think that film definitely had some of that in there for sure. That was just a time in my life where it kind of made sense. But now I wouldn't make that movie now, you know, because now my life is different with my father. And so I wouldn't even bring that to the table. And so it's interesting how that works.
It is. I actually understand what the heck you just said. I do.
Yeah. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, sometimes we act on raw emotion and then you write something or you play music and it comes out and then it's like, yeah, now I'm all good. So, you know, I wouldn't even make this movie now. Definitely not the same way I did.
Right. And you put that behind you 5-7 years. Now everybody just saw it for the first time. What's wrong with you? Like, no. We already buried that one.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, he's got daddy issues.
Yeah, right? Seriously. Yeah, and your garage band just knocked down the garage door. Like, no. We played that years ago. All right. But yeah, I just dug like what I got from watching the trailer to Jackson. Just that creepy kind of the carnival that rolls into town. You never see who's in charge or who's rolling the projector. It just seemed like, yeah, there's something, well, in the shadows. And I guess we can't talk too much about it, but I'm totally intrigued.
Well, very cool, man. Very cool. Yeah, I can definitely send you that link for sure. And then, you know, it's going to come back to the public soon. You know, I'm looking at, you know, like the Film Hub stuff and getting it back on some platforms and things of that nature. So, you know, obviously, once it gets back out there, I'll let the world know.
Yeah,
so they
please.
Can watch it too. Yeah.
Please. Well, we got some big stuff coming out for you. So we got, all right. So Eyes of a Roman, November. We got Sherlock Holmes, March. Correct.
Yeah, so Eyes of Roman comes out November 5th. I'm actually having a red carpet premiere at the Kerrville Callow Theater here in Texas. It's about 40 minutes from San Antonio. And basically because we filmed in that area. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of the cast and crew from that area. And so it sort of just makes sense. That's the first place to show it in a venue. Unless we make Austin Film Fest. Yeah, oh, we did submit to Austin Film Festival, and we're definitely hoping we get picked up there, and we'll see what happens.
I bet you do.
Yeah,
I bet
but
you
in
do.
March is when we're filming Sherlock. So.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. So I'm confused on dates. And all right, yeah, because I'm just excited, and I hate waiting.
Right.
But, and all your stuff too. I should ask this one: practical effects. Do you use practical effects?
I don't use any green screen in my stuff, so it's all real.
That's what we want to hear. And the soundtrack, of course, I heard a little bit in Jackson as well. Use the same composer for Sherlock and Mare of the Night and Eyes of a Roman. It's the same composer for them.
So for Jackson and Eyes of a Roman, the same composer, Antonio Gradanti. I want him for Sherlock, Mare of the Night.
Okay.
But he has not signed on just yet, just because he's busy with Disney.
Yeah,
right
Disney,
now.
I know. That's,
and
360.
He actually wrote a song for James Gunn for Peacemaker.
Wow.
So his song is on HBO.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I'm glad I asked that again. Hey, man, thank you so much for doing this, and thanks for putting up with us and our scheduling and everything else going on. We hope to have you on when these films come out so we can recap and get some reviews from people that saw it, including my my co-host not here. But I look forward to meeting you, too, someday.
Yeah, of course. You come to Austin every once in a while, and so whenever you come back to Texas, let me know, and we'll definitely hook up.
Love to. South by Southwest is this weekend, too, from what I understand, or this week, and I would love to have been there for that, but that's another story. Let's see. Wow. I had so much more to talk about, but we'll save it for another time, and I want to wish you all the luck in the world. I want to thank you for coming on, CJ Goodwin. And as far as music, I'm going to look up that band that you gave us and hopefully listen to some more of your soundtracks too. Your soundtracks intrigued me. Like when I first couldn't get the trailers to play because I left my phone on and walked away. And I heard it. I'm like, wow, what the heck's going on here? And I ran back and I was like, wow, this is really good. Totally intrigued. So guys, trailers, you got to just watch them. Watch Jackson because it's fun. And let's bring that one back, folks. And Eyes of a Roman, watch. Are there two different trailers for that? I saw you gave me two, but I think they're the same.
Yeah, so there should only be, yeah, just one trailer for Jackson and for Eyes of a Roman. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you Google both of those, it should pop up, to be honest. I think the Jackson one's a little more challenging because I think if you just type in Jackson, I'm pretty sure Michael Jackson pops up.
Oh, jeez.
So you got to put in, like, Jackson horror trailer, and then it should pop up for you.
You got that, folks. That's very important. Very important. And I'm sure your eyes are looking to the future. I don't know if you can tell us what you have planned, but I'm sure you have, like, five different things in your mind right now. What's next on your plate?
Yeah, so after Sherlock, Mare of the Night, we're probably going to be doing a horror trilogy, to be honest, which is going to be pretty wild because we're planning on filming all three within a six-month time frame.
Wow, cool.
And then we want to release each film, like one every year, basically.
All right. I like that.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun. And then I kind of have like what I call my Oscar film. It's a big Texas movie, and that one would definitely need, I don't know, definitely some money behind it and a lot of actors. So we'll see if I can get there. I hope I can because the story we have is a beautiful story, and I would love to be able to tell it. So,
well, watching you pave your way, I can tell you it looks pretty good to me compared to a lot of people I have talked to, and some of them very good stories. Yes, I wish you all the luck in the world, and I can't wait to watch these movies. And hey, are you doing any horror cons anytime soon?
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm just
too busy.
Yeah, you know, I got the festivals coming up and then the premieres for Rise of a Roman. And then, like, we're kind of filming the teaser trailer right now just to get ready for the crowdfunding push for Sherlock. And then, you know, then the holidays will be here.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll be with doing the family stuff. So.
Oh, that again. Yes. Yeah. Well, if you happen to be in Point Pleasant on September 16th through the 18th, I will be there for the Mothman Festival with my author friend Christine Soltis, and it's going to be a hell of a great time, and they do it every year, and this is the first time we actually got in, so I'm looking forward to that. Many a HorrorCon coming up, folks, and if you want to find us on Facebook, Kettle Whistle Radio. If you got music for us, you know, hit me up on Facebook, man. David, you know, my stupid name, last name, Fairhead, F-A-I-R-H-E-A-D-A, you know the name. But kettlewhistleradio@gmail.com, if you have music to send me, we will play it with your permission, and I'm at Fairly Doc on Twitter, and of course, Instagram, kettle.whistle.radio, and this is where you send out all your socials right now, sir.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously you can find me on just the IMBD page, CJ Goodwin, it's Goodwin with the Y. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and that's probably about it, I think, you know. But I'm pretty heavy just on Facebook, to be honest, you know, that and Instagram. And then all my films are on Facebook as well. So Jackson, Eyes of a Roman, Sherlock, Mare of the Night, even GH5. They all have their own page. So feel free to, you know, get on there and feel free to reach out to me anytime.
And I'm so glad we got to the bottom of GH5 because I was very curious about that. Well, folks, friends and fiends, thanks for listening. And check out CJ Goodwin's work and go see his films when they're available. I'll probably let you know when they're available for streaming, for sure. All right, and have a good night.
Cool. Thanks, David.
Take care, man.
Pop culture, subcultures, music, horror,
sex,
politics, art, and overall bad ass.
This is Society 13, redefining podcasting.
Hi, I'm Lessa Godet, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.
Welcome to Sara Talk Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned into a bit of a different type of show. I'm Sara B and I'm your host. You can find me on my IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA. I talk about amazing, relevant conversations and topics and what functions that goes on in this magical, wonderful, wonderful city of the City of Angels. My IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA.
Electric acid.